Hey, good evening, everybody.
Howdy, howdy.
Here we are again, another Sunday night.
As always.
And those of you that are tuning in, I noticed that apparently WrestleMania is happening tonight.
Oh, we're gonna have low viewership.
Maybe because I mean the people that are in the one thing are often into the other. So, I mean, it'll
Sure,
see.
sure, sure. I'm not super familiar with wrestling myself, but I certainly know a lot of people who would watch it without fail. So,
Yeah.
do you? I was just gonna say, I mean, maybe this is a question for more when we get into it, but you've chosen to play Return of Double Dragon tonight,
Right.
and this is a video that you did a long time
Th
ago.
that was it was the last like kind of like game-based episode that I did not appear on camera.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. And at the time it was kind of made out to be a bit of a review, more reviewy than what
Right. It
we
was
do now.
part of the takeaway,
The
which
takeaway series. Does it I it's been so long since I watched the episode. Does it have like the whole little plus and minus
Yeah.
set up? Really? Man, that was so long ago. Remind me, because again, it's been so long since I watched the episode. There's a reason that you're playing the Super Famicom version, but I was looking at Wikipedia and it looks like it came out in Japan, North America, and Europe. So what's the situation? Like, this is kind of an unusual game to be playing on an American system, if I'm not mistaken. So what's the deal?
Apparently it's much more like you know I don't remember like the differences. It's been a while since I should know it right off the top of my head, but it came out after the US version, so they're able to I think it runs better.
Oh, interesting.
But they removed all the story that was there in the Japanese version, or
And
in the American version, sorry.
if I remember, your overall feeling on it was there was a you had felt, I think, like it was maybe kind of hyped up a bit, but you felt a little bit let down.
Yeah, at the time, but I feel like it's my feelings on it have improved over time. It's kind of strange because this video it's done really good
First, yeah,
for something that was so early on in the channel's life.
it was one of those weird videos where you didn't really expect much to become of it, and yet it to this day really has continued to be a consistent performer.
Yeah, I mean,
Like
sometimes I'll get like
it's
comments
not,
on it.
yeah, I mean it's not huge. It's not a huge video, but at the time it was released, it did surprisingly well, and it's just, it hasn't ever brought in huge numbers, but it has brought in just this consistent trickle. There's just
Yeah.
certain videos that just, it's like, why do people keep watching this one? And this was one of those mystery videos.
Yeah, it just, it's done pretty good. But I feel like my opinion has improved over time on it. Like I come back to it every once in a while, even though it has been a while since I played it now. But after I did that video, like I played it several times more and feel that maybe I wasn't quite right about it. And like that video was like a full-on like a review. And we don't really do reviews anymore.
Right. So you were looking at it with a more critical eye than you normally
Right.
would. Which, I mean, not to say that that's bad, but I feel like we go into games looking for something different than we did even at just, a couple years ago at that time.
Yeah, now we kind of go and just kind of looking for something.
Something interesting, just anything interesting.
Yeah, something more interesting to talk about.
It'll be interesting for me watching this because just over the past year, I've played both Streets of Rage 1 and Streets of Rage 2, and I didn't expect to. I'm not really a brawler fan, so I didn't really have much expectation to really care that much about that series, and I ended up really liking them. So I'm
would you
I'm
get the third Streets of Rage if you were to come upon it? It's a bit more, it's a bit pricey.
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure about the U.S. version, but I've always heard the U.S. version's kind of not as good.
Right. They made like everybody's even, like outfit colors weird and stuff like that.
Yeah, even the import versions are pretty expensive. In fact, I think they might be more expensive.
Really?
But, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would like to play it sometime. I guess I'm also kind of a little bit curious about Final Fight now, because I know that that is the one that, you know, Double Dragon's not really compared to Streets of Rage, but Final Fight, it's like Final Fight versus Streets of Rage. I don't know if it was just the circumstances and the time that they came out that they're compared, or if it's more than that.
Well, I mean, Final Fight is kind of regarded as, you know, like, even though Double Dragon kind of, like, invented the genre, the... Final Fight kind of reinvented it in a way that was much more like there's like grapples and stuff like that. It's a bit, it kind of created like this, like the formula of which, you know, Streets of Rage is.
Well, I feel like Streets of Rage was very, I mean, it was simple and easy to get into. It had just enough moves to be interesting, but not, it didn't have like complex combos or anything. And that's kind of what turns me off to from a lot of brawling. And two, one thing, I mean, this definitely changes later in the game, but especially, you know, in the first half of the games, I feel like you, the enemies, you know, aren't damage sponges, and they, you know, they take a reasonable amount of hits. Like in a lot of brawlers, I feel like you're finding the same people forever just to whittle down that health bar. And it felt like, you know, you got through one enemy quickly enough, and then you're fighting someone else. And I appreciate that, because it just kept the game moving much better.
Yeah, I see somebody in the chat mentioned Sunset Riders. I actually pulled that game out, and I have it sitting over there. So if I get tired of this, I'm going to play Sunset Riders.
we played through the entirety of Sunset Riders while we were at G-Anime. On the arcade.
Yeah, you know what? In my researching of arcade PCBs, the Sunset Riders is not that expensive.
Really? How much is it?
I mean, it's like... like around like $120 maybe.
Well, it's a bit. I mean, the fact that you can get anything arcade related for, you know, less than $800 is astounding to me as it is. So
right.
you got to jump on that Super Gun thing. I want to see, you know, the video that you come up with to talk about, you know, getting the, what you gonna call it, getting the best picture out of your arcade PCBs.
Maybe. That might be the RGB entry, yeah. You never know. So I almost was gonna play like Sunset Riders as like the main game tonight. I was gonna just like do a couple of run and guns.
Which version do you have?
I have the Super NES one. Which is the expensive one.
And you got it for a really good deal.
Yeah, I feel like I paid like maybe like $40 for it.
Oh, I thought you paid more like 30.
Maybe it was 30. I, you know, it's been a while now, but yeah, I mean, it's a good game. I was gonna play that, and I was just gonna do a couple of side-scrolling running guns. I was gonna do that and Midnight Resistance on the Genesis, but you know, I can save that for another time. I thought it would just be fun. I kind of felt like playing this. I'm going to go ahead and start this.
We were going to have an episode ready for this week, but we decided to put a little extra time into it and let GameCube, since GameCube had been such a long time coming, we thought we'd let GameCube have 2 weeks at the top.
Yeah, and not just that. Since Friday was April Fool's, we didn't want to release a serious video on April Fool's.
We thought about releasing an April Fool's video, but we just didn't have time to pull it together.
I'm going to boost my credits up to 9 from the normal 5.
Huh. As you get started here, I need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not getting any game audio. I don't know why. Unless it's over here. I don't know why I don't have any game audio. I had it just a minute ago. I'm just gonna, I don't know, hang on. No idea where my game audio went. Unless it's something over here. I mean, I literally had it just when I was getting set up. As soon as I get kill all the enemies, I'll... Let's see if I can figure out the game audio situation. One second, everybody. Well, I guess I'll just have to... Apparently there's not going to be any game audio tonight. Hang on, let me see.
You don't have game audio? What's wrong with it?
I have no idea.
Can you even hear it?
Not through my headphones. Hang on.
Is your Super Nintendo not hooked up correctly?
Yeah, I mean, it's feeding the
speakers. Well, I hear something.
Well, that was just through the speakers. Which I have turned off.
This starting area looks surprisingly Streets of Rage-ish.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, hopefully nobody minds, I guess. I'm just gonna play. I don't wanna waste all my time trying to figure out why there's no audio. Oh well.
We'll talk over it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
kind of like the big thing in this game is the counter system, which you can, when they try to attack you, you can, like, if you time your button press, you will like grab like their punch. Hang on, I'll show you. It's kind of like a block slash, I can't get to that.
It's weird how far down your HUD is. Like there's a huge margin.
Oh, above. yeah, on the edge.
Yeah, I mean like above it, like it's just kind of oddly far down.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it would be cut off in the, to some extent, the overscan, but it just seems excessive.
One of the things I like about this is it has a individual punch and kick button.
Mm.
It's just not just like a...
That's something that, you know, me again is not like a big brawler guy. Like, it's it's really not been clear to me in a lot of games, like, what's the difference between punching and kicking.
Right.
Like, it just... I mean, sometimes maybe one is high and one is low, but in a lot of games, it's just not obvious what the difference between a punch and a kick is.
Yeah, I mean, in most, it's like, just like part of your combo.
That's something that I liked about Streets of Rage was there's just one attack button,
right?
Other than your special, and so, yeah, like you say, it's part of a combo. Like I don't want to play a game that's like, you know, kick punch as a combo or something like that. Just does not interest me in the slightest. Like I am not into, you know, memorization combos and stuff like that. I'm into simple attacks, and you know the depth comes from other aspects than just, you know, all the different moves you can do by, you know, combination of punch, kick, punch, punch, kick, mm-hmm. punch, kick, whatever. that just doesn't interest me. And so does anyone have any recommendations for, like, you know, 16-bit? I mean, I don't know.
You're going to get Final Fight. Like, Final Fight 2 isn't very good.
Brawlers that, you know, for someone whose favorite brawlers are, you know, newly Streets of Rage, like, that's as complex as I want a brawler to be. Streets of Rage and Ninja Turtles, like, especially, like...
You weren't a big fan of, like, the arcade versions. You like the NES version of Ninja Turtles?
Oh, I mean, it's not that I'm not a fan. I'm definitely a fan of the arcade versions. I just got more of a soft spot for the NES version of Ninja Turtles. I'm not that huge of a fan of Turtles in Time, though. I'd like to play it again because I played Hyperstone Heist a year or so ago and I enjoyed it.
Right.
Which is basically the same game. But I'm just curious. I'm just curious what people would recommend for, like, maybe 16-bit era, roughly, brawlers, you know, outside of Streets of Rage. That for someone who, again, doesn't really care for brawlers that complicated. Like Beautiful Joe, like, it's so different, but in a lot of ways, I kind of probably consider that, like, the best brawler.
Everybody. Yeah, it's hard to think about, like, I don't really view it as a...
It's kind of just its own thing.
Right.
But it's such an amazing game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like a blend of brawler and platformer.
I see somebody recommends Rival Turf. I got that at Goodwill, like, a year ago. And that game seemed to have... issues on one chip systems, like the top of the screen had, like, some glitches for me.
I wonder what kind of sync cable you were using, because remember I told you that on one.
That's
on one
right. Chip, that was right, and the sync cable fixed it.
Right. I discovered that on some systems, sync on composite has issues with certain. Like, the issues I was fine was in Super FX games, but. I can't imagine that's a Super FX game.
No, it's I definitely had issues with that on a Sync on Composite, but then I got a C-Sync one, it was fine. That's right, I totally forgot about that. So, I had the same issue with the title screen of Demon's Crest with a Sync on Composite. Mm. Like, the red would cause, like, a issue.
See, Ninja Warrior has a recommendation. I think I've heard of that. Knights of the Round, which is pretty expensive.
I have that too. I could bring that, play that after this instead.
Yeah, I remember you recorded some footage of it for the Super Nintendo episode, but I didn't get much of a flavor for it from the little bit you got. Batman Returns, Super Nintendo.
I have
Nintendo.
That too.
Comic Zone. I played that on VC, and I really thought I was going to like that game. I played through the whole thing. I beat it. I just did not like it nearly as much as I thought I would. And my memory of it's pretty fuzzy at this point, so I don't really remember specifics of what I liked or what I didn't like. But I had higher hopes for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it was bad, but just, I don't know. Something about it just didn't do it for me. Well, I mean, great style, though. Very cool. River City Ransom. I loved River City Ransom. And I only played it for the first time. Was it last year or the year before? Sometime within the past, like, year and a half. Was when I played River City Ransom, and I loved it. Like, it's such a charming game, and it's crazy how far ahead of its time it is. Like, it kind of blows my mind. Like, your password is really for your character. And, like, it's cool because, like, each character has its own password. So, like, you and a friend could start off playing together, and then you could, like,
bring your character in.
You could like work on your character at your own house, and then like come back like after you've like leveled up your character and stuff, and like come back with your friend and like use your pass. Like it's almost like importing your character into the game. It's crazy, and like it's very open world. Like you just like there's not much limiting like where you can go. You just have to like find all the guys to fight.
Right.
It's a crazy game, and like the whole leveling up and item mechanics and system, like the game even has a freaking tutorial. Like in the menu, you can go into the menu and there's like a how to play section that's like actually like got all this text and it's fairly detailed, and it's very, very cool game. But see, again, like you know, what's interesting about the game comes from other facets than combos, which is just, you know, like I'll play games like, you know, the God of War style brawler. I love stuff like Bayonetta, like that, like, but it's, again, it's not like the, you know, the square, 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 triangle, triangle, triangle that I enjoy. Like it's just other aspects that are enjoyable to me. And I just kind of live with the combos because the games are otherwise a lot of fun, but.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could figure out why this is not, I'm just thinking for a second why there's not audio, and it's going to bug the crap out of me. Cause it was there like literally earlier today, but I've been messing around with my setup a whole bunch. I was telling you yesterday, I was on the verge of like pulling it apart.
Yeah, and I was like, don't do that the day before you stream.
Yeah.
Super Metal Dave 64 asks if we're only interested in streaming brawlers. We stream everything but brawlers most of the time.
Yeah, I mean we will stream. Whatever we think is interesting that, like, people... I mean, some people will like certain things and some people won't.
Yeah, this is just kind of random that Corey's streaming a brawler. Like, you know, like I'm kind of saying right now, I'm, like, not a big brawler guy.
Yeah. We try to stream things that you typically won't see people streaming. I mean, not always, but I think that generally we kind of do some different stuff.
Yeah, I'm with Blade Blur here. Lords of Shadow is it's a pretty good game. It's just it's not Castlevania, but it's a very striking game. Like I love the look and overall sort of feel of it. Like it is an interesting game, and I enjoyed it for its own merits. But I mean, yeah, it's not very Castlevania. Like I actually got, I mean, you can get Lords of Shadow 2 for like what, like 10 or 12 bucks brand new. I got that just a couple months ago. I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, I haven't played it either.
I'm kind of looking forward to it. Like, it's, you know, it's part of what was Castlevania's downfall,
mm-hmm.
and Konami's downfall, but I think that would have happened anyway. I don't think we can really squarely lay the blame on it being a factor. I mean, Konami misinterpreted what they thought people wanted from Castlevania, and that obviously wasn't it, but it's still a good game. I liked it more than
a lot of people generally liked the first one, but I mean, people wrote off the second one pretty quickly, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I was always surprised to hear that apparently Lords of Shadow 1 sold decently. Like, I just assumed it did badly. I mean, that's why there was a second game, but apparently it just did not, the second game didn't sell. I enjoyed the God of War games, and, well, I say in the PS2 era, I actually didn't even play them until, like, probably 2007. I liked the PS2 ones. Okay, I'm, like, so over that series right now. Like, I just, like, have absolutely no interest in that series continuing. But I liked Lords of Shadow more than I liked any of the PS3 God of War games.
Oh, that's, like, that's interesting. I mean, you know, I would agree with that. I mean, a lot of people really liked God of War 3, and, you know, like, I should replay it.
I mean, I played it a couple of times. Like, I don't remember that much about Ascension.
Other than Ascension like was a, like not.
I mean, it had a really cool final boss. That's like the only thing I remember about it.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
like
it was
it was before the PS4 came out, and I like kind of had a hard time believing that they pulled that off on PS3. Like, it looked just so incredible.
Yeah.
Like that. I don't even remember like where in the timeline it takes place. I guess. Weren't you like chasing down like the? It wasn't the Fates. That was God of War 2. Wasn't there a Mantis lady, and there were like several other like goddesses that were like related.
I think so. You know, that was the game I was playing when I discovered that my HDMI splitter strips the HDCP. That's probably the most memorable thing about the game to me.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't, like, after a point, they're, like, prequels of God of War just, like, did not interest me.
Well, I mean, the thing about God of War for me was always, like, I never cared the least about Kratos.
Right.
Never, I didn't find Kratos to be an interesting character in any fashion, but I liked what happened around him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I liked about the God of War games, because everything was just so overblown and huge. And I enjoyed that take on Greek mythology. I liked just how huge they made everything.
Right.
Like, I think it's a really cool interpretation of Greek mythology. Kratos himself, I think, is entirely uninteresting. But I liked God of War 2 the best. Like, I just think it had the most interesting overall things that went on. But God of War 3, it was okay. But I would say Lords of Shadow, the first one at least, was better than any of the PS3 God of War games. I mean, not significantly so, but at least, you know, by a small margin.
Oh.
Zach H. asks, you guys ever played Double Dragon on the Atari 7800?
I feel like I may have played it.
I've actually never played an Atari 26 or 7800. I can't get the number. Like, I can remember 2600, but the others, I always screw up the numbers. It's 50 something hundred and 7 something 70 something 100. Isn't there also a Master System Double Dragon?
There is, and it was one that if you had a Master System and you sent away something, you could get it for free. Like, I got it for free. That's why there's a lot of copies of it out there.
You sent away what?
I don't remember what I had to send away for.
Like fill out a paper from a magazine or something?
Maybe. It might have been like a Sega Visions thing where I had to fill something out. No, I don't think it was. Can you look it up? Put in, like, free Double Dragon Master System offer. Because I did it, and I got it in the mail. And it took, like, 6 months to get it. I mean, it seemed like 6 months. You know, when you were a kid, like, summer felt like it was, like, a year long. And
let's see. Nothing's coming up immediately. Master System. No mention of it being free on the Wikipedia article.
I mean, it wasn't free for everybody, but there was a...
Yeah, it's nothing's really coming up for it.
Huh.
It might be something to research. You know what would be interesting is taking a look at Master System versions of games that are on the NES.
Yeah.
Because in every single case, the NES version is going to be better known. But it'd be interesting just to compare the versions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like there's the Ninja Gaiden that came out. Not in the U.S. I don't think that came out in the U.S.
I think it's a totally different game from what I've seen. It looks pretty interesting.
Now that I have Master System Everdrive, I can do a bit more with the system.
Yeah.
I mean, my library is fairly significant. But, I mean, I used to have a lot more.
I want to know more about that consoleized Game Gear and that Master System.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Slot. Like, I wonder how much those cost, because I could really be... If they weren't, like, super, super outrageous, like, I couldn't really buy it now, but I would definitely be interested in setting aside some money sometime for those. Because, I mean, I can't even think off the top of my head what Game Gear games I would buy, but if I had a system to play them on, I would totally find something that I would want to play.
I don't know if I can combo, or I can counter these guys.
Like, it just looked so cool. Like, it looked like a real thing. Like, it was like a tiny Model 1 Master System with a different color scheme, and it just looked so cool.
Well, that guy said that that's what he's gonna make.
Yeah. Like, I don't know which I would want more. Like, the Master System is too big for my IKEA cubby holes.
Yeah, it's a big system. Like, it's much bigger than you think it's gonna be.
Yeah, I would. That's like, it's so stupid, but that's like the biggest barrier against me gaining an actual Master System rather than using a power based converter.
Right.
Because it's like, I don't have room.
Well, you know, I just actually, on Friday night, I got a couple of things. And one of the things I got was one of the Sega card games called F-15 Fighting Falcon.
Okay.
And that's like one of the few games that does not work. I think it might be the only game that does not work on the power based converter.
Is it the only card game release in the US?
No. No, it just, like, even other card games will work fine, but this is one that just will not work.
Well, I've never seen a Master System card game. Like, what is it, like the exact same cards that TurboGrafx uses?
It's not I mean, they look the same, but they're obviously, like, the technology is different.
Why did they release, like, why did they have two different formats?
I think that it's just because they wanted something that was cheaper to make.
And the cards were cheaper, I assume?
Well, the cards were cheaper to make, so it was just, they were going to put, like, smaller games on them.
Oh, so they don't hold as much?
No.
Are they less durable? I mean, like, the TurboGrafx cards are, like, really.
Well, you don't want to bend or crush them.
Like, are they less solid than the TurboGrafx cards?
Oh, geez, I just fell off the side of the semi here. I don't think so. I think they're exactly, like,
okay.
I mean, they feel the same.
The TurboGrafx cards feel solid. Like, I just think they look really cool, the TurboGrafx cards.
Yeah, I mean, these look exactly the same. But, I mean, the technology internally is different. As far as I know, I mean. I mean, they're the same size.
And can they can play on the official power based converter and both versions of the Master System?
I think Master System 2 removes the card slot.
Oh, okay.
But they will play on the official version of the power based converter. See, it's so, like, stupid. Like, there's this enemy in this game is just like a palette swap of your main character.
So the, I mean, what percent is a very small number that's card-based Master System games?
Yeah, I feel like it's like maybe like 5 of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That might be a good episode.
Yeah. Just all of the card-based Master System game. That'd be interesting. I wonder if it's at all challenging to get your hands on them. Does the Game Gear have FM sound? That's a good question. I have no idea.
I have no idea. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, once we get into the Master System episode, I'll be able to kind of... Or not the Master System, the Game Gear episode. I'll be able to research it more. I mean, I never owned one, so I can't tell you very much about it. I had an Atari Lynx.
Yeah.
That's my portable of choice.
You should get one again.
An Atari Lynx? Yes.
Do you even know how much they are?
No, will you look it up?
Yeah, let's look it up. Atari Lynx. I mean, it looks like there's a few different models.
Yeah, I had like the bigger one, the gray one. There's like one that's really big and gray, and the other one is black, and it's more like football sized.
Okay. So
it's football sized. I mean, it's that's probably a bad way to describe it. I think that they refer to like the smaller one as like a football type thing.
It looks like the prices are kind of all over the place. I'm seeing one that's down, one of them's 52, but it looks like the average is more like 80 to 90, maybe 100.
That's not bad.
Is there such a thing as a consoleized Lynx?
No, there is a mod, though. I know that Jeremy Parrish just got one that does like an RGB output. Like I saw him tweeting about it.
It's not like a portable version of the Jaguar or anything like that.
No.
Okay, it's not.
It is interesting. Like the Lynx is interesting because it had hardware scaling and rotation before the Super NES was even out.
Before what was out?
I mean, what's the release? I don't know if it came out before or after the.
See, for some reason, I thought the Lynx was later
than the Super NES. But you know, I might be wrong too.
I'm thinking of Neo Geo.
Okay.
Well, I was saying it was like Neo Geo was like later '90s, right? Neo Geo Portable, I mean.
Oh, the Neo Geo Pocket.
Yeah.
That was. I want to say that was like '98. Or so.
Wow, so the release date was October 1989. Wow.
For the Lynx?
The Lynx, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that was like before it had scaling and rotation.
It wasn't even discontinued until 95.
That's surprising.
The Game Boy only released 2 months before the Lynx. That's crazy. That kind of blows my mind. I had no idea.
That it was like ahead of its time like that?
Well, I mean, I had no idea that it was like releasing so close to the Game Boy.
Right.
Have I ever told the story about how, when did the Game Gear come out? Came out in...
Yeah, they both systems went through batteries like crazy.
Well, this is
you pretty
weird.
Much had to play them plugged in.
On the so Game Gear released in 91. This is interesting. It says discontinued April 30th, 1997 by Sega. This says North America 2001 Majesco. It was re-released as a budget system by Majesco in 2000 under license by Sega. What?
Well, I mean, that's happened a lot with, like, the Genesis, too. Majesco, like, has, like, the budget systems.
Like, does the Majesco system look any different?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're still doing the one that's... Majesco, I think, is the one that put out the Genesis 3.
Majesco Game Gear.
I mean, of course, when we get to the...
I mean, I'm not seeing any pictures that look, like, obviously different.
Someone's saying the Majesco branding was in Brazil. Like, I mean...
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, I think that Majesco did the Genesis 3.
Oh, wait, Kefka says he's wrong.
Oh.
Apparently they look similar on the outside but have some internal differences. I had no idea.
Hmm.
It's kind of crazy. I remember the first time I ever heard of Game Gear. I was going to stay over at a friend's house in third grade, and I was like thinking, well, like, should I bring my Game Boy so we can like play Game Boy games? And so I asked him, I said, do you have a Game Boy? And he says, I have Game Gear. And I'm like, okay. I'm like,
what is it?
I thought he was talking about,
I'm going up or down. I'm going down.
I thought when he said Game Gear, like, to me that sounded like he was talking about like he had like
some gear to play games.
Like he had like accessories for the Game Boy.
Right.
I'm like, but do you have a Game Boy? He's like, no, I have Game Gear. And I'm like, I'm thinking, why do you have accessories for the Game Boy but not an actual Game Boy? And so then when I went over to his house, I saw he had this like Sega handheld thing with a lit screen. I'm like, whoa, this is not what I was expecting. Yeah, the last time I tried to play Game Gear was a couple of years ago, and it's just like so hard to look at. Like, I don't know.
Well, that has to do with the capacitors.
I'm sure that some of the screens have aged better than others.
Right, but you can get it recapped, and it looks pretty great.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so hard to, like, I had to reduce the contrast like a ton and hold it like a weird angle to even really make out what was going on.
There's in one of the upcoming versions of the intro, of our new intro, there's three different versions of it, and one of them has a shot of the Game Gear in it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty cool shot of just kind of like the corner of the screen.
Right.
How long have you had that Game Gear?
That's what I'm borrowing from RetroRGB. He sent it to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He sent me a bundle for when we do that episode. It has like four of them in it, and like a Game Gear EverDrive.
Four Game Gears.
Yeah, like one of them's like RGB modded, and you can output, you know, to the FrameMeister with it, and like different colored ones to show like different things to show. But I mean, who even knows when that episode's going to happen? I mean, I'd like to do it this year, but we'll see what happens. I feel like the year's starting to like really move fast now.
Shogun Gino says the Game Gear and Lynx were battery serial killers.
They were.
Double A's run in fear of them. Double A's tell horror stories to their children about them to make them behave.
That's a good way to put it. I'm sorry there's no music. I have no idea what's going on.
Maybe it was like my situation where
something must have just gotten unplugged.
Like right after I had the issues with the cable on the stream, it was last week, right? I bought another cable and it sounds a lot better. So, and it's like that one was like a weird like adapter situation because it was like a 3.5 millimeter plug out of my TV going to RCAs, going to an RCA coupler, going to a male RCA to female quarter inch adapter, going to a super stupidly long quarter inch cable, double quarter inch cable that went all the way around the room and through my compressor into a thing that takes the dual stereo quarter inches into a mono quarter inch into my compressor, out of that into my mix. It was stupid and way too many connections. And so I have a much simpler cable doing it now.
I've been kind of like messing around with my setup, trying to streamline things. Cause I was telling you that I just got a VCR that VCR / DVD recorder combo that actually upscales and outputs to
HDMI.
HDMI.
I had if I had known, I just couldn't believe that existed. If I had known.
Yeah, as far as I know, like usually those kind of things only they have like a separate.
Separate
RCA.
Yeah,
for...
you can't even do VHS out even component out.
Right.
On a lot of those. Yeah, if I had known something like that even existed, I would have bought it so long ago. Because that's the biggest pain about recording VHS is that when you're sending out the signal analog composite, it's an unstable signal, and modern recording devices don't like it. So that's why DVD recorders are so great for VHS output. But something that would already upscale it to 1080p like that, right. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to have, you know. I had, like, a stack of things, and I could just, like, condense it. What I think is actually cool about it is that it outputs over HDMI and RCA at the same time. So I can run the RCA to my CRT and run the HDMI to my capture card so I can, you know, I can watch on the CRT at the same time.
Yeah, I really want one. What brand is it?
It's a Samsung.
Samsung. Let me look this crap up. Let's go to the old eBay.
It's like the 5150. Like, so I always like look at Goodwill for stuff like that, and I've seen several, and then I always, you know, if I'm in the store, I'll always Google it to like see what people like, if I can get a manual to see.
Wow, this isn't that bad. This is Samsung.
I can tell you what it is. Hang
this
on.
Is Samsung DVD V9800.
Hang on. It's like the 5150 or something like that.
This is only $60 free shipping. Like, I feel like that's not that bad.
It's like black and.
Yeah, it says remote not included, so that's kind of...
Well, if you have a Harmony, like, I'm just using the Harmony remote on mine.
Yeah, well, I don't have a Harmony, but I do have a universal remote, except, like, normally I, like, teach functions to it. I don't know if a good signal for it would be already in the thing, because it's kind of old at this point, the one I have.
Right.
That is very,
I mean, I can
very cool.
Let you know exactly which one I have. But, you know, I didn't, like, I couldn't find a definitive answer whether or not it output over HDMI. So it was once a week or once every other week, Goodwill will have a 50% off of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was $30. I felt like it was kind of, I mean, it was $60 that they were selling it for, but since it was 50% off, you know, I felt like it was kind of like worth the risk. And if not, I could always figure out something to use it for.
Here's a few more. I mean, here's...
Like the DVD VR 5150, I think it is.
See, I'm not seeing that one. Here's VR 357. But that one's kind of expensive. But here's DVD... Here's several... I'm seeing several V9700. And here's one for $25, and here's another for $50. Not free shipping though. That one's a little. It's like $20 shipping. But what's this $25 one?
Hang on, I can tell exactly.
This is only $15 shipping. The thing is actually $25. VHS is RCA video out. That's what it says on this 9700. Man, I would love something that did that.
Hang on, I can tell you what it is here. It's the DVD VR, DVD-VR 375.
DVD-VR 375?
Right.
Okay, that's a little more expensive.
Is it more than $30?
It's like $130.
Oh, wow. Sorry. At first, when I got it home, I thought that I got it all hooked up, and I saw that I couldn't get a VHS to go inside of it, like it would go halfway in. So I was like, "Oh man, that sucks! It's not gonna work. I'll never know if it'll play it." And I opened it up, and someone. had jammed in, you know, when you get a VHS, how it comes with like the stickers, like that little sheet that has the stickers of like for the spines and stuff. That was just like jammed inside of it. And I just like pulled it out and worked right away.
Huh. Yeah, I bought a couple of bum VCRs from Goodwill. But you're going to make me want to start looking at Goodwill again.
I go way too much. It's, you know.
My Goodwill is like right next to my house, but it's the most annoying. Like, it's in the stupidest location, and it's like really, it's like less than a mile from my house, but it's like so inconvenient to actually turn in and get out. And like, especially coming home from work, like it's on the wrong side of the road, and to get back onto the road, leaving Goodwill, like that road, it's so backed up at that time of day.
Right.
So I hate going. Like, if it was more convenient, I'd check it out more often. But like I say, in my area, we have a Goodwill operated store called The Grid, which specializes mostly in video games, but you know, they also have stuff like TVs and stuff. So like all the the coolest electronic stuff ends up getting sent to The Grid. I found this really cool DVD or not DVD VHS dub machine at Goodwill a while back, and I bought it, and it didn't work, but I kept it, but because it looks cool. But it's like two VCRs built into one unit, so it's like a double tall VCR.
Oh right.
And it looks so cool, and it doesn't work, but there's like this tape stuck in it, and I forget what the label on it says, but it's like a home recorded VHS, and the label on it is like some like. Sounds like some terrible horror movie. And that just sounds like
it's like The Ring is like
yeah. So if I ever like actually get out that tape, I probably shouldn't watch it.
Yeah, like those are like the scariest kind of horror movies, I think.
Yeah,
like the ones that are just like so like you don't really get it as much anymore, but you know, when I would go and rent VHS, there's always like these random really terrifying VHS covers, like the covers on them like look so scary. The one that I always remember, and it's like the name of it is just like combined with the name of the movie combined with the image on the cover is just like the grossest combination. And you should try to see if you can Google it.
Okay.
It's like the cover of the video had a it's kind of like a large guy, and he was like eating an arm. He had like had blood always like eating an arm, and the name of the movie was called Lunch Meat. So you should look up Lunch Meat horror movie.
Lunch Meat horror movie, okay.
And that was like a movie that was at a place called Movie World. I feel like every town had a video rental place called Movie World.
Oh, I didn't have a Movie World. Okay, there's like two versions of this cover. There's one where he's like actually got the arm in his hand. He's just going, he's like right in the middle of biting into it. But then there's another where he's just like
holding
he's just kind of holding it, and he's just like looking.
Right, the one where he's like looking is like it's the one that I remember. But he like has blood around his mouth and everything. Like he's obviously eating it.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to look at it now because it's been.
I'm gonna send you this.
Put it in the chat for people that are parental discretion advised. Let's look at it.
It's
Oh, that's the other one. Yeah.
He's just like, he's just going, oh.
It's tasty.
He's got his eyes closed.
Can you send me the other one? El Muerzo Fatal.
Here is, I'll put it in the chat. Here is the other one.
This guy is.
A but that Kirk Alex film. If decapitations, cannibalism, and brutal, savage acts of suspense and gore turns your stomach, this film is not for you.
So that's like definitely one that got me. And then there was another one that was had a picture of like a head being severed on the cover, and it's called as like 555. It was called.
Huh.
And that's like that is like. If you want to Google that one, like the cover is just like a head getting cut off, and it's like I can't believe that they would get away with putting that on the cover of the movie.
It looks like it's got like it's almost looks like the Nintendo Power logo. It says Massacre Video Presents. It's like the worst looking cover
of the 555.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was,
I mean, it's like, I mean, it's just,
but isn't
like,
it kind of amazing that I could get away with just putting that on the cover? Or is it,
it's just,
is it worse in my memory than
I mean, it probably it just looks like actually looks bad.
Oh,
like, I mean, it just like, or I'll post it in the chat. It's awfully strange looking. Again, parental discretion advised. You know, all this is kind of reminding me of that fake Dark Souls 3 VHS commercial.
Oh, right. I think it was Eli Roth that did that. I think I read that he was the one that did it.
I know that name.
He did he was like a Hostel. He did
Oh, okay. Yeah, like it makes Dark Souls 3 look like that kind of movie.
Right. I mean, he's like, you know, he's like friends with Quentin Tarantino. You know, like he did one of the commercials on Grindhouse. You've seen Grindhouse, haven't you?
I actually haven't.
Are you serious?
No.
Oh man. It's great. It did not do well in the theaters when it came out. But I think pretty good.
I would like to. I've wanted to see it. I just never have.
Well, if I ever come there or you're here, I will. I have like the three hour version where it's both movies, one after another. Because when they came out in video, they extended them a little bit and released them separately. But you're not getting full experience if you're not watching like both of them with the fake trailers in between.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that definitely sounds like part of it. Is there a VHS version?
No. I'm pretty. It would be cool if they did it, but that was well after. I mean, Grindhouse, I feel like it came out in like 2007 or something, 2006.
You know, I saw something. I forget.
I gotta close this window with the lunch meat thing on it. You know, in 1994, that was really scary.
I saw something come up on Twitter this in the past week about something about saying, like, I forget what year it was, but saying it was like the last major Hollywood movie that released on VHS.
Really?
It was like, I don't remember what year it was. I want to say it was either like Liam Neeson or Viggo Mortensen or something like that. I forget what movie it was.
I have no idea. And it was pretty recent?
Well, I mean, it wasn't recent. I mean, I just saw something like it said like what, it wasn't like recent, but it was like, it just said like, you know, in such and such a year, this is the last VHS from major Hollywood studio was released.
Speaking of VHS, I think the Ratchet and Clank the remake is going to be a good candidate for to bring back How to Beat With.
We should think about it. Doesn't that come out like next week?
That's really soon. I feel like
yeah, or it's not this. It's I think it, you know the thing it sucks about is it releases. I think it's the 12th and it's the same day as Dark Souls 3.
Right.
So that's like terrible timing.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's gonna hurt it. I mean, yeah, since it's different audiences, but like I don't see a lot of people talking about Ratchet and Clank, so I always worry if it's, you know, popularity is on the downturn. But, like, I just really like those games.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I hope the movie does well. I'm excited to see the movie. Yeah. I mean, I don't know when I'll see the movie.
It'll introduce it to a new generation, I think.
Hopefully.
Which is, I mean, that's honestly what a series like that needs. I mean, to keep it popular.
Once I get the nunchucks, you're like invincible. Keep everybody so far away.
Well, Shogun Gino thinks I'm talking about History of Violence.
Oh, that would make sense. That's the
last VHS.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. And I've never seen it. I know of it. My boss at my old job in New York really liked it. He talked about it a lot.
You remember how it was like? It was so weird how long it was that it took for Star Wars Episode One to come out on DVD.
Yeah, I mean that was a long time. That was a long time. Like, I mean, videos just still took a long time then. But I guess, right, you know, we were well into the DVD
generation. Right. I mean, my point is, like, it came out on VHS.
Right, before and DVD.
It was like a year until it came out on DVD.
Right, because there was still no Star Wars out on DVD, I don't think, at the time.
I think that's right.
Because that used to be a big thing.
Because they didn't release it on DVD until at least after Episode Two. Because remember, they added Jango Fett's voice to Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
And Hayden. Well,
it must I don't have think that Star Wars episode, came out on DVD until actually I had moved to New York. So that was end of 2003. I don't think
it was. It must have been after. It must have been after Episode Three. Because I don't think there's ever been a DVD of Star Wars that didn't have Hayden Christensen at the end of Return of the Jedi.
I'm pounded here. Look at this. He's got me in a loop. Like,
by far the worst change in the whole thing, I think.
Really? That's the one? Wait, you think the Jango Fett is the worst change?
Well, no. I'm saying Hayden Christensen.
Oh, putting him into Return of the Jedi.
Into Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even mind Hayden Christensen that much, but that's just a really obnoxious change.
Yeah, that's pretty obnoxious. The one that I
like, I actually just, you know, me and some friends watched. I mean, you know, we watched what we got. I've got the DVDs. So we watched them before Episode 7 came out. And
oh, so you haven't bought them on
Blu-ray. I've not bought the Blu-rays. No. I was not as offended by the Jango Fett voice as I was at first, but like I really didn't like that at first.
Yeah, I think the one that I guess didn't like...
in the grand scheme of things, the Jango Fett voice isn't that bad. I mean, it compared to other changes, I guess.
Yeah.
But what struck me the most about all that, you know, rewatching them was that. The whole, like, I was never that offended by the special editions because I wasn't, like, I was getting into Star Wars, like, right around the time they were coming out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I only watched the original versions, like, once or twice each before the special editions were even out. And, like, I was, like, really into, like, at the time I wanted to make special effects, and like, since digital effects were like the new and upcoming thing, like, I was really fascinated by it. So I like was not offended and maybe kind of even into the special edition stuff, just because of a lot of circumstances. But going back and looking at it now, like, it'd been since college since I'd really watched the Star Wars movies, and it really does make the movies just less. The biggest problem is that it just makes them less cohesive.
Right.
You know, at the time, I thought that CG looked dead real. Like, I just thought it looked real. Like, I just didn't see how you could do.
That's crazy.
Like as soon as CG started, like, I thought, like, this is it. Like, we're not going to get better than this. Like, we've already got it looking perfect. Like, at the time, it just looked that way to me. But looking at it, like, you've got these practical effects that look fine mixed with these CG effects that were definitely done a little too early, and they don't look fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like, in terms of, I really hate Jabba the Hutt in Star Wars, like, especially like in the special edition, the one that they first released in the theaters, it looks so bad.
I want to say, like,
but I hate that
in the original version of that scene when Han steps on his tail,
yes,
it's like one, like, he's here one frame and he's up here one frame.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is.
Like, it's crazy how bad that is.
Yeah,
like it is weird that whole scene. Like, especially, I mean, Jabba's like so skinny,
and he's like a total like pushover too, which is like, it's really out of like character for him.
Yeah, they should have just accepted that. Even though, yes, they did shoot that, and it was within their vision at the time, it doesn't jive with what Jabba became.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I really hate that, like, that edition. And I really hate in Return of the Jedi when they, like, made, like, the band, like, all.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I mean, it looks like they made it for 3D because, like, the alien's lips, like, go in front of the screen.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I hate it when they...
It's almost fourth wall breaking because of the way that they, like,
yep,
almost look at the camera.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, I hate... Like, that was such a big thing with, like, early, like, CG stuff where they'd have them, like, kind of, like, mug for the camera, like, get really close and, like, roar right at the audience.
Uh-huh.
Like, I hate that kind of stuff.
God, but, I mean, man, it looked real, didn't it?
No.
Like, when I saw episode one for the first time, like, I mean, you know, like, the special editions were like a taste of the digital, but episode one, like, nothing had been done on that scale in digital before. And I think I was the right age. I wasn't, like, I was a big Star Wars fan, but I was not, like, a long-standing Star Wars fan.
Right.
So, like, I think it was just, like, the right circumstances for me to have really gotten into it at that time and just bought into the whole digital world and all that. You know, looking back, I can see that it wasn't the wisest decision. But at the time, I was totally into it and totally okay with it.
Yeah.
It was the right circumstances for me.
Yeah, I see somebody, someone saying, I've gotten so sick of Star Wars. I could see that. Like,
I feel like I kind of got sick of Star Wars and I didn't realize it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
But now that episode 7 has come back, like, I'm definitely not the Star Wars fan that I was, but I definitely feel the excitement around it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's become fun for me again.
Right.
I remember, like, it was just kind of subconscious and unintentional. Like, I Like my roommate in college was a way bigger Star Wars fan than me, and you know, I was a pretty big Star Wars fan at the time, and so we like, you know, that kind of, you know, continued to foster my love of Star Wars, and we watched the movies several times in college, and just for some reason, like after college, like I remember, like I put in like the DVD for episode 3, and that was like one of the first things that I tested on my surround sound system, which I got like I already kind of had the money saved up for it, but I didn't want to buy it until like I was living on my own working a job. So like that was like the first thing I did when I got my job was buy a surround sound system, and I put in episode 3 is one of my first things.
There it is, a slow motion final boss dying. Happens in slow motion. So,
yeah. But that's pretty cool. But I don't remember what I was.
Well, you put it in.
So I popped in episode 3 and just like watched like, because I love the opening shot in that movie. Mm-hmm. Like it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it's like the best part of the movie.
It goes up. That is episode 3, right? That it goes up, or is that episode 2? Because
episode 2 is the one that goes up, but episode 3 is the one that has like the big
continuous shot.
Yeah, it's the best part of the whole movie.
No music, right?
I think. No, there's music. It's like kind of like a drum.
Yeah, that's right.
Boom, 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 boom.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And, So, like, that's I did sweet. That. And then other than that, like, until me and my friends watched the original trilogy prior to episode 7, like, I just, 10 years passed. And I realized, why has it been so long since I watched Star Wars? I thought I was a big fan.
Yeah.
And, like, when I got into Mass Effect, it was kind of a weird realization when I realized that, like, in my mind, this is, like, replacing Star Wars as, like, the sci-fi thing that I'm most interested in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, I mean, I don't really think of Star Wars as sci-fi, but, like I feel like there's only so much room in my brain for, like, sci-fi and fantasy universes. Like, when I first played Dragon Age, like, I was like, why am I filling my head with this when I could, like, just learn more about, like, Tolkien or something, you know? And I was like, I was playing Mass Effect, and I'm thinking, man, all these planet names are, like, going to start overriding my memory of planet names from Star Wars.
All right, so I'm going to try and see if I can find a different game. Maybe okay. Sunset Riders, or maybe not. We'll see what else I got. Be right back.
Go for it. You know, I would look more into Star Trek if it just didn't seem so intimidating. It's so much to watch. Like, would you say that if all I watched of Star Trek was like the movies, and I'm not talking like the recent movies, I'm talking like the old movies mainly, but like, I mean, I guess those two, like, would the experience be worthwhile to just watch the Star Trek movies? Because I just feel like all that TV show, like, I've never been a big TV guy. And so I've never really watched much Star Trek. But, like, if it would still be, like, a worthwhile experience, I wouldn't be kind of lost just watching the movies. That'd be cool. Oh, Raven? I think you sent, did you send the message to the My Life in Gaming account? We saw that, and we meant to reply. I think we just forgot to.
For what?
Raven asking us about the DVDO.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We need to respond to that.
Right, I was supposed to on Friday, but I had a crazy day. Whether or not we wanted other controllers and stuff. Yeah. No, I mean, we were saying that was totally on me. Sorry about that. I see you sent a message. I'll send you my direct email address after we're done with the stream. That was totally on me. Sorry about that. I tried to look over and see if I could figure out why my audio is not going through, and I don't know why. It was there earlier.
Weird.
Yeah.
Maybe got a loose wire like me.
Maybe.
Where is this ultimately? Where does your game audio come from? Is it coming out of the TV?
No. It. So I have a HDMI splitter box. I have a second one because mm-hmm. I want to run to this other monitor here, and that one also has an RCA out on it, and I run that to the mixer.
Is it a splitter?
It's a splitter, but it also has RCA audio out.
Does it strip HDCP?
I believe so, yes. It is a...
I never knew you had that.
That's the one that Game Dave recommended to me that he got, but then I saw that there was...
Oh, well, there, I bought that one,
It's like
too,
the Vue HD or
the
something.
Vue HD, yeah, I bought that one just like, because I'm like, well, you know, I should like have an extra just in case.
Right, that's kind of why I did this, but I saw that they had one with the RCA out as well. It goes over HDMI and RCA, and I was like, you know, I could probably use that to send audio, because before I used to have it go through, have to turn on my big TV, and I sent the audio. They had like a 3.5 millimeter out, unamplified sound that I could run right into my mixer. But this made it so I didn't have to have that other TV on. I probably just need to rewire, like pare everything down, because I have it so... Everything's just like buried under stuff at this point.
I mean, the way... I've got things now, I've got several sources that are using fiber optic audio, and I can listen to those, but since all of the systems like are doing multi audio output, ultimately everything that is fiber optic audio is also getting to the TV, either through the FrameMeister or through the HDMI switcher. So the TV is always receiving stereo audio. So I can just output from my TV and it goes directly to the mixer, and it's all audio, no matter whether I've got it set for fiber optic or not. It's just, it's got it.
Right. That's a good way to do it. I mean, I could probably... Everything is just like connected in such a way, like I feel like it's connected very good, but I could probably, I just wish that things were like a slightly more accessible.
Well, that is a pixely explosion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm pretty into it.
I think that this would be like such a good like co-op game. What's like the going price for the Super NES version these days?
It's probably like $80 if I had my best guess. Is like the Super Nintendo version a lot better than the Genesis version?
The Genesis version is different. I'm pretty sure that's the one. This one's more like the arcade version.
Yeah, complete is like $200.
Wow. No, I only have cartridge only.
Cart only, like, I'm surprised of the gulf between the prices. Cart only is like $80 to $90. There's one that's about $100. The Super Famicom version's like $55. Oh. What is this? There's a 3-in-1 Super Famicom, or it says SNES. Maybe it might be a a European cartridge. It's got Top Gear, Sunset Riders, and Super Formation Soccer 2, and it's $45. I don't know if it's like a repro or... I'm going to look at how much the Genesis version is. So it like it's like what you're playing, is it like pretty faithful to the arcade?
Yes, yeah. Except for it's two players instead of three.
I thought the arcade was four players.
Oh yeah, it is. It is four players.
Ooh, there's a bad looking card only Genesis that's like $39.
Well, the Genesis version isn't. I mean, I guess that is it down in A that makes you slide. Oh, no, it's just A that is a slide. Oh,
here's one that's $40 complete. I don't know why here's one that's card only complete. Well, here's another 70. I don't know why that one is. Maybe that one's only... This one might only be box and manual. I don't think it has the game. Yeah, it doesn't have the game. It's $40. So it's like $45 for the game. Card only.
Huh.
That's pretty expensive too. Like I liked the arcade game when we played it, but I don't think it was like it wasn't worth that kind of money.
Yeah, I mean I think that you'd have fun playing the console version with two players.
Yeah, I mean I think it'd be fun, but I just don't think it's worth the cost.
Right. Probably not.
What I wish I could have is Wild Guns.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the virtual console version, like, but I just, it's such a good game. I really wish I could have a physical copy.
Yeah. Has anybody in the chat heard about that game that you were mentioning earlier? The Adventures of the Quest for something? For Teddy or something?
That Wii U and PS4 game?
Yeah.
Yeah, some people on Twitter were telling me that I would probably like a Wii U and PS4 game. It's probably also on Steam or whatever, called The Chronicles of Teddy. Apparently it's a Metroidvania. It was described to me as Metroidvania with Zelda 2 and Shantae undertones, which I think
immediately interests you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like all things I like a whole lot. I'd never heard of it.
Let's see if I can not die on the first boss now. I don't think I ever died on the first boss until today.
How many levels is this? Like 7 levels or something?
I don't remember. Jeez. I don't think I've ever like had an issue like this on the first boss.
Have you beaten the Super Nintendo version?
No, I have not.
I mean, I imagine it'd be pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've done pretty good on it, though. I think I've made it pretty far.
Like, the overall... Like, I don't know if it's maybe just, like, the taller characters and, like, the two-tiered structure. It kind of makes me think of... what's that one game that you did for the Namco on Genesis? The spy game. I'm drawing a blank on the name.
What is it again?
On the Namco on the Genesis episode, there was
Rolling Thunder.
Rolling Thunder, yeah.
Right.
The Rolling Thunder 2.
Right. You'd like that. That'd be a good one for your backlog streams also.
Drum has the Tengen cart for Rolling Thunder 1.
Well, still. I mean, the second one is like the good one. Is like the best one, I think. Although I barely played 3. So I can't. I like playing as Bob, not just only because he's green. Rolling Thunder is a like two is like is such a good game. I'm not saying that the first game is bad. That's actually the first game is on the that Namco Virtual Arcade compilation disc that I got for the Xbox.
Original
A lot of weird
Xbox?
compilations out for the Xbox, actually.
Original Xbox?
No, Xbox 360, sorry.
Oh, okay.
There's definitely a lot of weird kind of compilations out for the system of like downloadable games that are which in Friday's episode I'll be talking about one of
Ah,
them.
yes. Well, at least one such compilation.
That's right. Like I said, it was supposed to be out this Friday, but we just had another release on April Fool's.
That
Probably
you
should, we probably
wanted
could have just
you wanted
released.
you wanted a little extra time to polish it up anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't need like a ton of polish. I mean,
Like,
there's not a lot to it.
have you edited my sections much yet?
I have your first section that the second section is like half done. So
Do
once like
you
all the footage gets in there, then I can kind of nice shoot the
do you
B-roll
need
in.
some like B-roll shots?
I might, but
Like, I think I made a couple of mentions of some moves that I don't have any footage of.
oh, well, I'll let you know as I get into it. Like I'm really like I'll try and finish it, or get almost finished with it tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, like give like show me a render of it when you're done or close to done, and
Sure.
like if there's something that I'm like, oh, like if I had gotten you a shot of this, it would be better or something.
Yeah. So earlier today we were on a podcast.
No, it was fun.
Yeah,
Good
and this
conversation.
the
Sets.
second
Second
opinion.
opinion games? Yep.
Yeah. And it will be out on Wednesday.
Yeah, he said, every once in a while they'll be in like the top 10 video game podcasts, like
On iTunes, yeah.
for like the week or whatever.
Yeah.
And
That's cool.
you were going to talk to him for some advice on if we wanted to create an audio-only version of our streams, which there was apparently at least a little bit of interest in.
I mean, I'm gonna do it.
I had
He
to.
offered to like maybe host them if we wanted to,
Oh.
but I mean, I'd rather kind of see what the before we really commit to it. Like I'd like to put up the ones where we had people on with us, just to see kind of like how many people are into it before
Yeah.
I like make it a regular thing. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We talked for the podcast itself was like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And we talked for a long time though before and afterwards.
I mean, I'm sure if I did if I didn't have to go to work for a little bit later this afternoon, I would have stayed a lot longer, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's cool.
But
We were on there with
also on the podcast is Evan Amos, who is the awesome guy who makes all of those public domain shots of video game hardware on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It was like heroes of
Yeah, he's like
everyone who makes videos and even writes articles about
Yeah.
games. Like,
The
it's
unsung hero for sure, you don't really hear his name as much for the amount that his work gets used.
yeah, and doesn't even ask for credit for it. Like,
Right.
it's unbelievable. Just an amazing service that he provides for the video game community.
I wish there was a way to be stationary and shoot without moving like a diagonal or backwards.
Yeah, that's the not that that is one nice thing that kind of came along with the advent of
Shoulder buttons.
shoulder buttons.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not every game took advantage of them, obviously, but that I'm typically into simpler control schemes. Like, I feel like fewer buttons made for more creative approaches to control schemes.
Right.
You know, I feel like when you have as many buttons as, you know, they start having so many buttons and double shoulder buttons and click sticks, you know, PlayStation and stuff. I felt like all of a sudden, like, well, because you have functions for all these buttons, developers put functions on all of these buttons. And I just feel like they came up with more clever stuff when they had to work within limitations. And, but I will say that is one big advantage to extra buttons is having a button that you can hold to stand still while shooting, like in Contra 3. Contra 3 does do that, right?
Yes.
But Contra Hardcore
does not.
It doesn't, but it's got like it's like a toggle. It's kind of
okay.
It's kind of weird, but it's a toggle.
Huh. You played that on like on one of the earliest streams that we did. Well, you know, we've been streaming for almost a year now. Even though we kind of like
Streamed Hardcore?
I feel like you may have done it like on the Genesis RGB episode. When was our first stream?
Oh, okay.
It was like in April or it was like in May, I think it was.
I don't remember.
I know this is like the 30th stream that we've done, I think.
That kind of thinking can lead to Other M's control. I don't remember Other M having control issues.
For what?
It's talking about like simplistic.
Oh yeah.
Like fewer buttons lead to creative controls.
Yeah,
I don't really remember how Other M controlled. Like, you know that.
It would have been nicer to be able to use anything other than a sideways Wiimote in that. I think. I do remember thinking
I mean, that may have been pushing it, but it was interesting. Like, I think, you know, look, I'm not going to deny that story, characterization, you know, all that aspect of that game is bad. But at the end of the day, I still think it's a pretty good game.
I think it's fun to play.
Yeah, it's fun to play. Like, yeah, you know,
you can, like, you know, suplex people, alien.
As much as people love Metroid Fusion, which I've been surprised at the consistent love that game gets, because I feel like when it first came out, it didn't get much love. And I
was disappointed with it when it came out.
I was disappointed with it, too. But, like, I get the impression that, generally speaking, people like Metroid Fusion now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I think that the reason I was not super disappointed with Fusion is because Prime came out the same day.
Yeah, I mean, I was just disappointed. I was disappointed in the linearity because that was just not what I expect from Metroid. And but it's interesting because I do get the impression that Metroid, I think Zero Mission is more loved, but I get the impression that I just don't see people generally say they don't like Metroid Fusion these days, which, I mean, it just surprises me a little bit because it is not one of my preferred Metroid games. I mean, it's good. It's fine. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think that from a gameplay perspective, Other M does anything any worse than Fusion.
Yeah.
From a gameplay perspective.
Gotta keep these guys in blue, like, out of the picture here. Jeez, I'm getting crushed here.
I'll
try it on easy for a little bit.
You know, I think an issue that some people might have with Zero Mission is that it screws with their memory of the original game. It's like things aren't where they expect them to be. I played Zero Mission before I played all the way through the original Metroid. I was, like, so scared of the original Metroid for a long time.
Because I think the only thing that's really annoying about the original Metroid is, like, starting with no energy tanks and 30% energy, like, every time you continue.
No matter how many energy tanks you have, you start with 30 health.
Right.
Which is it's just so irritating. Like, there's no, like, reason for that. Like, there's no, it's not like, ooh, the game is more challenging because you start with 30 health. No, it's just annoying. But the thing that, like, I like when I actually sat down and got serious about playing through the original Metroid, like, I you know, tried making my own map, and I actually ended up having a lot better time with it than I expected.
You've generally, you know, since you've, you know, like, finished, like, all the games in your backlog, and you kind of, like, you had a similar experience with like Dragon Warrior 2 and 3, didn't you, where you made all of your own maps and had a really great time, kind of.
Yeah, well,
like, limiting yourself.
Like, I felt like Dragon Warrior 2 and 3 didn't really need mapping, except for the last dungeon in 2, which I'll admit I looked up a map for that, because that dungeon was nuts. But the thing that I did for Dragon Warrior 2 and 3 was I took notes, like, on things that NPCs right. said and hints, and like that really enhanced my experience. Actually, on the backloggery stream, we were playing Police Quest last Monday, and we're going to finish it. We're going to finish it tomorrow. And I found when I was just like doing some serious cleaning up around here a couple of weeks ago, I found this notebook full of like. This binder full of like lined paper, like, you know, that you used in school.
Right.
You know, not exactly used to seeing this kind of stuff these days.
And what was in it?
I mean, lined paper, blank paper.
Oh, I see. I thought it was maybe something you had used
somewhere. And I normally do write my like shot sheets for My Life in Gaming by hand,
right?
And this, you know, so I mean, this is better because it's got lines on it. I wrote like my last few shots I need for the GameCube video here, and here's the notes we were taking on the backloggery stream for Police Quest, and you know, so we might need to refer to them again tomorrow since it's been a week since we last played. And I also got here. I've got this like old magazine rack next to my couch where I've got like all this stuff. Here is this is actually two pads of graph paper on a clipboard for making maps with.
With Phantasy Star, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually bought this pad of graph paper for Phantasy Star years ago. You know, back when it came out on the Wii Virtual Console. I bought this graph paper for Phantasy Star. It's just, you know, it's all part of the experience. We, you know, we have, I think, an expectation these days we don't want a game to take us as much time to get through as we did back then.
Right.
And, you know, I'm as guilty of that as anyone, and you know it shouldn't take us as long as it did back then. But if you've got the time, even if you just force yourself, you think, oh, that doesn't sound fun, you know, writing notes by hand or drawing your own maps. You think, that doesn't sound fun. But just try it, because I agree, it doesn't sound fun. But you just try it, and it's like, oh, there's something kind of cool about that, you know,
as Rand Miller said.
Yeah, exactly, that tactile experience, you know, taking the game outside the game to an extent,
right?
There is something fun about that.
What did he say? It becomes atoms then.
Yeah. it's not bits anymore, it's atoms or something. He says right. Something like that. Yeah. And that's something that you can like keep,
mm-hmm.
as a memento of your experience. You know, that video has like gotten a lot more views than I realized lately. Like,
yeah, and you said the same thing about Famicom 3D System has been.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, Famicom 3D System is now our most viewed showcase episode, and that snuck up on me. And on the playlist, like our playlist on our front page on YouTube, for for the showcase series. Now that's at the front of the playlist there, because that one's ordered by popularity. And the Rand Miller video is now on the front page, and that blew me away. I just had no idea that it had been getting that kind of views, because I hadn't paid attention to how it had been growing lately. So that's pretty cool.
It's always neat when that happens. You know, like I had a similar experience, you know, like the Sega on the Xbox is like the most.
Yeah, and it's been on the front page for a long time.
Yeah.
I want to say that the game that the episode that the Rand Miller video dethroned was actually the Super Double Dragon video.
For being the highest viewed.
For like the fifth highest viewed showcase.
Oh. I mean, maybe it's. I was thinking more.
I think
more,
so. Like it. I mean, because that, like I said, that one's been like a very consistent performer. But like, I'm glad to see that the Rand Miller video has gotten up there, because that was always such a key video for us.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's probably the best showcase video.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, I haven't really gone back and looked at it recently. Like that was. The one thing that I didn't that video was I didn't like how, like when I shot my on camera parts, I think I didn't really do the lighting that great, and I think I shot it a little too dark. So once I got color corrected, it was kind of, it was a little, like it all. I thought that the color on me in that video looked it almost looked like I was shot in black and white and like colorized. Like it was just a really weird, I got looking the best I could, but like it's actually kind of weird, like once I got my new camera late last year, like I don't like going back and looking at how my camera looked in other episodes. Cause I think it looks like the B-roll shots I think looked good, but like my on camera stuff, like I think just looks so much better with my new camera. Like that's what benefited maybe the most.
Yeah. Your new camera is pretty sweet. It's definitely makes me want to upgrade.
The only thing that is disappointing is that it doesn't handle CRTs as well.
Right.
As my old one did.
And mine has actually like gotten better with the way that, now that I understand how it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of shooting a CRT with it.
The weird thing is like, sometimes when I'm shooting on my new camera, I don't even notice that there's like a really bad line. Like one of the last shots I got for the GameCube video was like an off CRT shot of Tales of Symphonia right around the town.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just so ready for it to be done that I almost didn't go back and reshoot it. I was just like, oh.
Yeah. I find that you can see the line really well if you zoom in pretty close and then unfocus it.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it show up really, really
easily. Well, but what my experience is like, sometimes the line like goes away depending on how I focus, or maybe it's just an illusion. I don't like, and there are some shots with really bad line in it in the GameCube video. Like there's an Animal Crossing shot that's like right in the middle of the screen. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
And like those, there's some extreme close-ups of characters' faces from Skies of Arcadia right at the beginning of the video where I'm demonstrating the interlacing effect, and mm-hmm. the line is right in the middle. But I feel like since you're seeing the interlacing, like your eye isn't really drawn to it. But the reason I went back and reshot the Tales of Symphonia shot without the line running through it was because it was using GC Video Lite, and I didn't want to create the impression that, like, you know, I mean, I think most people understand what it is, but I mean, we live in a time where it's been a long time. I mean, since people, you used to see it all the time on like TV news or whatever. You know, you'd see shots of TVs, and people got it. People knew that when you shoot a TV, it looks funny.
Right.
But nowadays people might not think about that as much, and I don't think it's necessarily dumb for someone to be like, ew, what's that line? Is something wrong?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always like, I don't want to have to explain it, but when I'm trying to make something look good, and if it like matters, if it looks good, I just didn't want to create this, false idea that line was some sort of interference in the
right.
PC video light, which is not true at all. It looked actually really awesome on the PVM. You can see in the comparisons that at least in its current version, and I don't know if this can be fixed in future versions, it is a little bit darker than the official component cables, but especially when I was looking at it on the PVM, it looked awesome. It looked plenty bright and clear, and no obvious, non-obvious downgrade in any fashion. It looked awesome.
Sorry, I'm just focusing.
Very, very bright and clear.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. I was doing really good there, too.
Yeah, it's so weird that the GameCube version of Skies of Arcadia does not have 480p.
It's unfortunate.
But as far as I know, there's no issues with
forcing it. It looked fine.
With forcing it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I got the footage forcing it for you, with the with Swiss. Turn it.
Yeah, I think. Oh, yeah, that's the intro. Did you record the intro?
I did the intro and other things, a lot of other things too. Jeez, I'm just getting torn apart here.
my favorite part of that whole part is Aika just has this stupid goofy smile on her face and she's like smiling when I say that forcing 480p has no impact on performance, and she just like does this big stupid grin.
All right, let's see if I can not.
All right, this is good news.
There, finally.
I kind of liked that shot, because I felt like it was that whole Skies of Arcadia intro. I was able to run that for a really long time, just because it was had a lot of movement and stuff, and so I felt like I could get away with not cutting to another game for a while.
Oh man! So you think that the. The next RGB episode is going to be the shorter one on the
N64
anti-aliasing. Your script's almost done for that, right?
Yeah, I posted last week on the forum thread for that to find out if anyone could help us with that. And I've forgotten to check back to see if there were any replies. I need to get on that this week. I'm going to probably do a shorter showcase next. I was planning on doing a multi-game next, but I think I just got a lot of crap I'm trying to get done.
Yeah.
So I think
you said you wanted to do Conquer.
I'm thinking about doing I'm thinking about doing a single game.
Like a rare after the.
Well, which only has really one option. I'm thinking about doing for my next showcase. I'm thinking about doing Conquer on the Xbox.
Right, which is would go into the rare after
rare after Nintendo series. I think part of that is inspired, but I was just playing Banjo-Kazooie on the Xbox 360. I got an Xbox 360 last week, finally. You know, only about 11 years too late, right?
Right.
You know, I went through a lot of phases where I thought I was going to get one, and I never did. And I'd been on the lookout for, you know, the whole past, like, year and a half, like, for a really good deal. And I just kind of lost hope in there ever being, like, a good deal on 360s anymore, because people are focused on making good deals on Xbox Ones now, you know?
Right.
And I wanted, you know, at one point I thought, maybe I'll just get an Xbox One and play 360 games on. But, I mean, it's not – the compatibility is – you know, it's emulation. And at the end of the day, I really should be playing the games on original hardware.
Yeah.
Or at least I want to. And not everything I want to play is even compatible. You know, like the Sakaguchi games, for example. Like, those are that's a big part of what I want to play on Xbox 360, and they aren't compatible yet. So yeah, I just kind of gave up hope. I had like a whole bunch of credit card rewards, and so I just cashed it for cashed them in for a $250 Amazon card. I'm like, okay, I'm going to turn this into an Xbox 360 and Trails of Cold Steel. So I felt like I didn't spend any money on Xbox 360. So I think, like, and I got Banjo-Kazooie, and I was playing the remake, the HD port. And so I think it was in part thinking about doing Conker kind of was inspired by that, and also the fact that, you know, now that I've got the 360, like, getting the 360 rare games is going to become more of a priority, and I can't get to Cameo without doing the Conker video. So
right,
it's going to be weird going back to Conker. I've only played through it one time. So it's going to be weird. And I think one thing that's made me put off the Conker video is that I'm going to need to play some of the N64 game, just like for comparison's sake, and also to just refresh my memory of it so that I can, like, be like, oh, well, here's like an interesting comparison between the games.
Right. You don't like the N64 version?
Oh, no, I do like it. I think a lot of people would think that game is too crude for me, but, like,
yeah, that's what I would think.
And I'll talk about, like, the thing is, like, I think it's, I mean, it's just my memory of it anyway, and it'll be interesting to see if it holds up. But I mean, it was like, I wasn't really sure what I got it because I was like a really big Rare fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that surprised me most was, like, I was expecting it to be essentially just like just all comedy. But what surprised me was it was actually a pretty good game, or at least I thought so at the time. And it was very different in terms of structure from Rare's other platformers on the N64. So it was kind of refreshing.
It's like they knew they had to do kind of something different.
Something different, yeah, because the whole collectathon thing had gotten a little overdone.
Right.
So yeah, it was interesting. It's going to be interesting going back to it though, without, like, you know, now collectathon is nostalgic now, and we're getting you know, Kickstarter games like Hat in Time and Yooka-Laylee,
right?
You know, that are tapping into that old Rare nostalgia, and. You know, but at the time it was kind of like, I think I played one too many collectathons. and so Conker was very refreshing for that reason. So, like, the thing I liked most about it was just it was a different feeling platformer than a lot of the other stuff we were playing at that time. You know, it'll be interesting going into it. You know, going back to play it again, like, what, 15 years later? It's kind of crazy it was that long ago. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons that I've put off going back to the Rare after Nintendo is because it's just like, I mean, I probably won't play through all of the N64 version, but it's a lot to capture, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of extra to capture, because I need to play through all of the Xbox version now. I need at least some refresher. I think, if I remember right, I think it's got like a chapter select. So, I think I can like skip around in the N64 game a bit.
That's good. I mean, I had a friend give me like a complete in-box version that I just like haven't really played much.
I always forget that it's so valuable.
I know. It's amazing that it's as expensive and stuff as it is.
See, Shogun, for me, DK64, like, I was still, like, way into the collectathon thing at the time. And, like, you know, it came out, like, right before Thanksgiving and, you know, it was what I call the Thanksgiving game. And, you know, where I just, like, do nothing but play that game until it's beat. So, I had nothing else to do but just play that game. So, I got 100% in that game and, you know, the span of a few days.
That's crazy. And it's like with every character and stuff too.
It's like as long as an RPG to like 100% it.
Wow.
It's like crazy. But like it didn't bother me. I think it would be really hard to go back to. Even just like capturing random footage for like the N64 episode and stuff, like it's like it has not aged well. Mm-hmm. Just like the feel and the look of the game. Like other Rare games, I think have aged a lot better, but that one, there's something about it. But technically, DK64 has more to collect, and is just way more over bloated than Banjo-Tooie, but it was Banjo-Tooie that I was like, man, this is too much. It's going to be interesting. I am looking forward to playing the Xbox 360 version of Banjo-Tooie, because for one, I assume it runs a whole lot better, because that was one of the worst performing N64 games, like in terms of frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way over bloated. Just so much. Like, it was the one too many collectathons for me.
All right.
It'll be interesting. Like, you know, so many years have passed. Now we've got nostalgia for collectathons. It'll be interesting.
That's 11. I was just backing out of the game.
Cool. But that'll be it. So anyway, I don't know. Like, it depends on whether that N64 anti-aliasing thing. It depends on whether like a good resource might be soon forthcoming for like where to direct people to. Because like if someone is going to be making like a website where they're going to be compiling the codes and the patches and stuff. Like, I want to be able to include that in the video and say, hey, go here to find a good list of patches. You know, if that's not ready in 2 weeks, then I might do Conquer first. So I'll see. I might start playing Conquer this week.
That's cool. I mean, it's just to like kind of, at the very least, you know, get ahead with stuff.
Yeah. But like I'm really interested to get to the Xbox 360 games. I've always wanted to play Cameo. It just has a nice look to it. It has, you know, it was a game that, you know, I thought I would be playing on the GameCube. You know, this is a point that I want to make in the video when I get to Cameo. It's on the back of my GameCube box. This Xbox 360 game is on the back of my launch GameCube's box.
That's so weird to think about.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
But you've been looking forward to playing that for a long time.
Probably. Yeah. Then. Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, I'm going into all of these Rare games with a open mind. You know, I've always generally assumed that they're not good after the whole Microsoft thing, but I was like, you know what? I need to know for myself. I need to see for myself where they ended up, because I was just such a big fan, and then all of a sudden, poof, you know, I haven't played anything of theirs since after Star Fox Adventures, because I didn't have I didn't have an Xbox. So I'm optimistic, because I'd never heard anyone say anything good about Grab by the Ghoulies, and I had a really good time playing that game.
Yeah.
It was surprisingly good. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to getting into this stuff.
That's pretty exciting. It's like a lot of people will be happier going back to the series. There's so many like series idea that I think that we get into, and it's just, you know, like we want to keep on getting back, but other things keep on popping up before it.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm really excited to do another. I mean, I was thinking, like, when I was kind of looking at games to play, and I was thinking, you know, like, I bet you a Konami on the Super NES would be a really fun episode.
Mm. Yeah, well, one of the episodes that I really want to get to when I've got the time to do a multi-game episode, I really want to do Konami on the Famicom Disk System, because I think that would be super interesting, because I've got the games for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a very, just the games that they put on the Famicom Disk System are very interesting.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't played through them yet, but they're unique games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not going to cover everything they release on the Famicom Disk System, but I'm going to play the ones that, from what I've seen, are the most import-friendly. You know, you don't really need to read Japanese or anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different series ideas that we just, like, haven't done so far this year that we were just like the episodes we've done so far this year, just we haven't kind of revisited our popular ideas from like last year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this week will be a Hidden Gems. I think that'll be fun.
Yep. Should release
and you can
Friday,
kind of focus
on... Friday at 8:30, I assume.
I mean,
ready in plenty of time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could have had it done this weekend. It's like ever since... since my wife's been like at working full time, you know, by the time she gets home, I'm just kind of like, ugh.
Well,
it's just an adjustment period.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that might do it for us for tonight, I think.
Yeah. So look forward to Friday. And
on Wednesday, we'll post out the link to the podcast that we were on, if you want to hear us.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Talk about musical choices and our videos. And
it was a good conversation. So
I was surprised when he was like, you know, wanted to talk to us about musical selections.
He was like, oh, man, who's
like the Grandia?
Who chose Grandia for that one video?
Because the way that that song ends in that is just like the best.
Oh, it's that, like the, I would say that the RGB 104, the CRT episode, contains probably the two best musical moments on our entire channel.
Yeah,
it's the Grandia music and the Beautiful Joe music.
Yeah,
like those are the. They gotta be like you just nailed it with those.
Yeah, I mean, those are two things that I didn't even think about until like we had started like getting everything laid out.
Yeah,
on it.
I'm kind of proud of the Advance Wars music moment.
Yeah, though. And you got some comments on that too.
Yeah. I think that might be like the favorite thing I've like my favorite little tiny editing moment on that I've done.
Yeah.
Which was entirely inspired by how you did the GunCon intro in your Time Crisis episode. But you know, Like, I have a very straightforward way of editing things, I feel. But then every once in a while, I see something that inspires me, and I try something that, you know, I'm not a quick cuts kind of guy.
Right.
But when I do try it, I'm, like, happy with it. But it just, it's much more time consuming for me.
Yeah. I remember you did, like, a really cool quick cut thing in the, Shinobi 3. In Shinobi 3 episode.
Oh, yeah. That was like, you know, cool. That was like kind of venturing outside my comfort zone. In the NES episode, I did the thing with like unscrewing the
right, opening
it was
up.
Unscrewing something. I think it was it like getting it, unscrewing the RF shield or something? Like, but that was like before I was like really starting to get into like using a lot of sound effects and stuff. So like looking at that now, it doesn't really have the right punch.
Right. Right. Well. All right. So.
All right.
We'll be back on Friday with some hidden gems, and you'll be streaming next week.
I'll be doing the stream. Those are going to be fun games.
Yeah.
You've sort of spoiled what your hidden gems are.
Just one of them I've spoiled. I've shown.
Oh, okay.
It's Austin 3532 is saying our videos need more star wipe transitions. You know they removed that?
They did. I was so mad when I started working on the Hyrule Warriors how to beat. Like, I was like, I can't believe they.
You installed the older version.
I reinstalled older Premiere because I was like I had already like imported all my stuff, got it lined up, and I'm like, I cannot in good conscience make this episode without Star Wipes. So I
even just one. You just need one, really.
I started from scratch. Because I couldn't do it without Star Wipes. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
Well, I see Shogun says he likes hidden gems videos. That's good. I mean, obviously, like, it's just we weren't expecting the kind of response that we got to our first one.
I'm kind of nervous about, you know, I mean, I'm going to have to pick for the future, but the cool thing about this one are they're hidden gems that I discovered in the past couple of months.
Right.
So, I mean, even if I don't, I'm looking at my collection, I'm thinking, people know about these games.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I mean,
I can always discover new ones.
I seem to have like a few more hidden gems in my collection.
Yeah.
Than you tend to a lot of times, but you never know what you might find.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. We will see you next week. And we'll post the link for the podcast we're on Wednesday when it's out.
Yep. Good night, everyone.
Good night.